Good morning, friends. Hello and welcome. Welcome, Lou.
How are we doing today? We're going to do a little time travel, I think, today. This is really interesting, what we were just talking about before this particular episode.
Yeah, why don't you give the audience a little bit of a taste of what you were talking about to me?
As I was thinking about it yesterday, and I was putting up the last two episodes of this series, this extensive series, a verse-by-verse read-through of the Gita and discussions around it, which has just been so fascinating, it occurred to me that this episode that we're doing right here, this final episode, is going to be top of the list on Facebook and on YouTube and on all the podcast outlets, Spotify and Google and Apple Podcasts and things like that. And this may be the spot where people dive in. They might get interested by the title and see what is this all about? And they'll go to this episode to listen. So I think what we should do is do this as kind of a conclusion and an intro so that we can tell people why they go back to episode one, why they go through this series, and most importantly, how to approach it, because I think it needs some changes in thinking from how we normally would approach something like the Gita. For example, and let's start here, the Gita is not a religious document. A lot of people, or it's not a religious teaching. I think a lot of people are going to approach it as religion, and I think that's one of the first things we have to drop.
Good. I agree with you. I had actually prepared the last five episodes, last five verses of the Gita that I decided last time that I wouldn't even touch on it because for a number of reasons. And I had prepared those. But then after speaking to you, I think that this might be a better idea, that we'd basically give the audience a sort of a conclusion, but also, as you say, this will be the first one that people will see now. And as a result, maybe this would be an introduction for people. So friends, what we have done so far, this is now, what, the 215th episode, I think?
16th, I believe.
216,
yep.
Okay.
Yep.
You know, we've done this now over 2+ years. Mm. Every week, Lou and I have done this, and I thank Lou for that. It's a complete analysis and explanation of the Gita. Now, many of my own relatives, when I talk to them about the Gita, they sort of put their hands to their ears and say, "I don't want to hear it." It's because they think that the Gita is all about religion,
and it challenges their religion.
Yeah. There's also people from other religions who are not Hindus that say, I'm a Christian or I'm a Muslim or I'm a Jew. I don't want to hear anything else. But Lou is right. This, after hearing this for 200 episodes, Lou is, as anybody would be after listening to this, recognize that the Gita is not a religious doctrine. It is more of a philosophy, more of a way of life, more of a way of understanding. And so if you go back and read this, you will find that there are at least three, there's probably many others, at least three ways of looking at the Gita. And as a physician myself, I was approaching it from two angles. And those are part of the three that I'm going to talk about. One is curiosity. One is people say, "What is God?" It doesn't matter which religion one is from. One says, "What is God? Where is he? Is it a he? Is it a she? Is it up in the sky? Down? You know, what is God? What is heaven? What is hell? What is sin? What is all of these different concepts that we learn about growing up?" Now, Hinduism has changed so much since the original Gita, which was 3,000 years BCE, so it would be 5,000 years before today. Mm. And that was a more modern book, the Gita, because it basically took all the essence of the Upanishads, Vedanta, and put it into it, because the writer of the Gita, Lord Sage Vyasa, said that all the Upanishads were too complicated for people to read. That was 5,000 years ago. Since that time, Hinduism has changed so much that you cannot recognize it today. So this is not a religious book. And it is, for me, as I was growing up, learning about different religious rituals, I thought that the Gita was about something else. So the first thing is, for people that want to know more about these concepts of God and devil and Satan and hell, heaven. That's one. Curiosity about how does this, about religion and all of that. This gives a great scientific approach to that. The second would be peace of mind, you know. And the third would be how do all beings around us fit into this whole concept, not just human beings, and how to behave and interact with them. The Gita teaches you, and why.
For me personally, my journey here, this attached to a lot of the things that I had been working on for years before you and I met, about mindfulness and about dealing with your own mind and dealing with your own emotions and trying to find, it's funny because my goal when you and I met, one of my goals was just more peace in my life, just finding ways to be more peaceful, at peace with who I am and where I was in my life and what was happening around me. And just, you know, instead of doing the struggle that we all do when we're young. And this spoke to much of that. It's all about, it in a large way, it's about peace of mind. That's one of the ways to approach it. And I think it's really fruitful in that way.
So addressing that, you know, India, if, for those of you who may not have gone to India, India is very crowded, lots of people, but it goes back centuries, not just 5,000 and 10,000 years ago. It goes back centuries. And in there, the books on religion, books on studies and spirituality are huge, numbers of them, thousands of them. And basically, they tell you, what do you want? What do you want out of life? Just like what Lou was saying just now. You can have anything you want. But then most people say, well, I'll take one of three things. And this is what the Gita talks about. Artha, Kama, and Dharma. Artha means the first thing that somebody wants is security. Security meaning I'll have a roof over my head, I'll have food to eat, I'll have... So that falls under wealth, money, fame, power, and success. And the second would be pleasure, which is to... And in India... The spiritual studies say, you want pleasure? Go for it. As opposed to some other teachings which say, no, deny yourself pleasure. India right. says, the Hindu, this Vedanta says, don't deny yourself, go for it, because you're not going to be able to suppress it. You will keep coming back. And this is one thing that keeps coming up in the Gita is reincarnation. You will keep coming back to life again and again until you fulfill your desires. So you might as well satisfy them. One thing that the Gita proves very nicely is that there is no amount of any of these things that you go for, whether it be pleasure, wealth, power, fame, success, that will satisfy you. That's the beauty. Mm-hmm. It says, for instance, money, right? The quest for money and wealth, the analogy in India is trying to... How does it go? Trying to quench the thirst of wealth with procuring money is the same as trying to extinguish a fire with butter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the more money you get, you say, okay, now my goal for wealth will go. No, you're actually just feeding it. It just gets to be more. And we've seen that with people who are extremely, extremely wealthy. No matter how much wealth they have, they just want more. So if you gave them every bit of money and wealth in the world, but there was just a little bit missing, their poverty would be described as that amount that was left behind. Yep. That would be the definition, what amount was left behind. It was in the Indian fables that the whole concept of the carrot and the stick came about, where a long stick is tied to the harness of a donkey with a carrot hanging in front, and the donkey keeps going after that carrot. And we are like that. We are like that. We keep running after success, fame, beauty, power for more and more and more. And the goal keeps moving further and further in front of us. Wealth is something that you look at it, and the more money you get, it has to keep pace with what? Not inflation. Any mm-hmm. accountant would say it has to keep pace with inflation. No, it has to keep pace with your desires, because your desires just keep going up and up and up for the same money that you're running after.
And what we will learn if you go through this podcast and go through the Gita and learn the lessons is that it's about your attachment to money or whatever your desire is. It can be any number of things, but it's about your attachment to it and how much in bondage you are to it, as much as it causes disturbance in your mind and makes you unhappy chasing it because you're never satisfied. You can accumulate wealth, but if you're not attached to it, then you aren't in bondage to it. You aren't disturbed by the chase of it. And this is one of the important lessons of the Gita. If you go through these podcasts, one of the things you'll hopefully learn and apply. And again, it's not just money. It's it's pleasure of any kind, whether it be physical, whether it be relationship-based, whatever it is, we all are in bondage to our desires to an extent. The Gita will help us try to lessen that.
Yeah, it's like Lou was saying, it's not just attachment to money. Because not everybody hankers after money. Some people are not attached to money. I know people who could care less about money, but they're extremely attached to their children or their family or their grandchildren. And that is the weak link within them for their own security, for their peace of mind. And that actually goes to the gunas that we talk about in the verses, and which part of you is more prevalent. Is it the body? Is it the five senses? Is it the five organs of action? Is it the mind or the intellect? And that's something else that I learned through the Gita that I did not know, even though I'm a physician. This was not something that is taught about in medical school.
Let me ask you about that, because this was the fascinating thing about you and bringing this. In the beginning for me, I was very attached to you being a psychiatrist and dealing with these and finding the gold in this, you know, for lack of a better term, finding the purpose in following the Gita. It really is explanatory of human nature to a huge degree, and it's something you trained in human nature as a psychiatrist. So tell me about your relationship with the Gita as a psychiatrist. Unlike myself, a layperson, I'm learning these things about human nature through these verses. You are dealing with teaching and assimilating the Gita into the teachings you already had. So tell us about that journey.
Yeah, so, you know, I trained as a Western psychiatrist. And of course, all of you know what that is like. I don't want to go into detail about that. But after I studied the Gita, this was while I was still in practice, people, patients who had been coming to me, even though they no longer had the symptoms for which they originally came to me, they kept coming to me once a week just to talk. They said, you know, I feel so much better after I come here and I discuss what has happened in the week that just passed. When I started getting exposed to the Gita, not just one patient, but more than one patient said to me, there's something different about you, doc. And I said, really? They said, yeah, something, you're not the same as you were. I've known you for a few years now, and you have changed. And I knew what it was. I knew it was having to do with the Gita, but of course, I'm not going to tell them, right, my patients, that this has to do with the Gita. Although there are one or two that I did mention it to them because I was very close to them and they were more spiritually inclined. Mm-hmm. But it changed my perspective and my way of dealing with people. And it actually helped the patients too. They asked me for paper and pencil and they started taking notes. But among the things that I learned right from probably the first class that I took in the Gita is that the anatomy and physiology that I learned was not as effective as the one that I learned in the Gita. Mm-hmm. For instance, the Gita taught me that everybody knows we have five sense organs, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and the skin. But in addition, the Gita taught us that we have five organs of action that cause us to act. I did not know that, and it's true. And then the Gita taught us, we just said we have one brain and one mind. The Gita says, no, we have a mind which is full of emotions and desires, and we have an intellect which is superior to the mind and basically has a decision-making process. And that intellect has two functions. One is a gross intellect and one is a subtle intellect, or sukshma buddhi in Sanskrit. Mm-hmm. And then it talks about all the permutations and combinations of the mind with the sense organs, the mind with the intellect, and how you function in life. This was something that, as a psychiatrist, I didn't know. And many, many people are governed by their sense organs, not by their mind, not by their intellect. I have a guy, my teacher, Gautam Jain, used to say that he knew of a man a few blocks away from him. Every morning, he'll take his car out and he just wax it and polish it and clean the tires, and his car was gleaming. But his own body, he would probably not bathe for days on end. He would be stinking. His house would be. So he was governed by something else. We may be governed by our sense organs. We may be somebody else may be governed by attachment to children, by the mind, by the desires. I learned from studying of the Gita that desires in every religion is considered Satan, a devil. That there is no real Satan or devil, as people say, he's underground, he's in hell. But right. Satan is symbolic of desires within us. That it is those desires that make us do the things that cause us, quote unquote, sin or having to go to hell.
That gets me to a very key point here, because as I related to it in my mindfulness studies of what I had done in the past, the Gita is another way of dealing with your mind and dealing with your emotions. And, you know, for me, observer position was a big part of that. And there's some of this in the Gita. And what I found while studying this all was there were a lot of modalities that were teaching this, from religion to psychology to the Gita, that were teaching. It was all the same thing. A lot of it was just different lexicon. And I think this is really important definition of terms here. If you're going to go into this journey with us here in this podcast, you've got to let go of some of the terminology. You just mentioned Satan. And for us in the West, or for me being raised Catholic, when I hear God, I see a man in a white robe with a long white beard and white hair sitting on a throne in heaven somewhere. And so when we use these terminologies in the Gita, that's why people confuse us with a religion. You have to kind of set down your terminology and be open to understanding that when the Gita talks about God, it's not talking about a guy on a throne.
Yeah, I think we've discussed that, you and I, Lou, in, I forget, this maybe the second episode, third episode, fourth episode, early on, to say we've got to address all these terminologies. And for those of you who are listening to this for the first time, if you go to the early parts of the episode, you'll see what Lou is talking about. Mm-hmm. But not just Catholicism, Lou, where you talk about God sitting on a throne up in heaven. But mm-hmm. now every religion has that feeling. We all tend to point up to the sky as if God is up there somewhere. And we know now from science that there is no God up there in the sky. Whatever there is, this force, we didn't talk about that. The Gita teaches us that essentially there is a force like electricity that gives us life. That really is what we consider God. Mm-hmm. That force, that life force, because many times people say, well, what is it that makes you live? It is the life force. Right. That life force, when it comes inside us, is considered the God. In Sanskrit, it's called Atman. Mm-hmm. The larger Atman in every being, every living thing, every tree, every insect, is that's considered Brahman. So you will hear this. This is described at length within the 217 episodes that we have. It talks about what heaven and hell is, because mm-hmm. when growing up, we were taught that you go into Svarga or heaven, or you go into Narka or hell. And that's where those terms were initially considered to be. In the Gita, heaven was peace of mind with no agitation, zero right. agitation. Where if you're sitting peacefully in the top of a mountain meditating, you're in heaven if you have no agitation of your mind. Whereas if you're very relaxed, potentially, or physically anyway, but your mind is just thrashing around with agitation, then you're in hell.
Right.
And the concept of after you die going to heaven or hell meant that even after you die, this agitation that you felt within yourself when you were alive, the Gita says you sort of carry it with you. And then you're reincarnated, you come back to life, with the same wishes and desires that you died having. That's an interesting concept.
We talk about this throughout the series, so as you go along, but just keep in mind that it reads like a religious document because some of these terms, God and heaven and hell and Satan and sin, we have attached to religious context, but that's not what the Gita is all about. So just keep that in mind as you go. We remind you throughout the episodes as we go too, when we're using the word, we use the word sin a lot, but it's not an act against God or an act against the rules of God. It's disturbance of the mind. So this is how you have to reshape your thinking a little bit to get the most out of this podcast series. The other thing, you mentioned it, you mentioned science. People are going to be surprised to find a lot of science in this podcast series as well. And they're going to be amazed, as I was, on how much the ancients knew. The Gunas, for example, are the precursor of the string theory, are they not?
Yeah. Yeah, there's mention of the string theory. We talked about astronomy. We talked about how the Gita talks about the fact that the sun revolves around the center of the galaxy and the earth. Not only does it talk about the sun revolving around the center of the galaxy, it actually tells you exactly how many years it takes for the sun to complete one, and how that affects us as human beings. That, I thought, that's episode, 87 or 89?
Yeah, friends, it's amazing. Yeah.
If you listen to that, it just, to me, that was so fascinating that just like plants and you and I as human beings rely on the sun completely for our life. Without the sun, if the sun was absent, we'd be dead. More than that is also the fact that we rely on the center of the galaxy, something that we in today's science don't know, that the center of the galaxy produces some energy that reaches us. And depending on what part of the revolution around the center of the galaxy the sun is, and therefore we as an Earth is, we are either close to the center of the galaxy or furthest away from it. And based on that, we go through periods of time during which we are either extremely, it depends on how close we are to the center of the universe for us to how we behave. Right. And those yugas are called Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga. And in the Kali Yuga period, which we are in now, we're the furthest away from the center of the galaxy. And as a result, there is crime, there is war, there's all kinds of other things, negativity, that is not so when you're closest to the center of the galaxy.
And this is knowledge from over 5,000 years ago. And not only did they know about the center of the galaxy, which you can't see with the naked eye and couldn't 5,000 years ago, 5,000 plus years ago, they knew about elliptical orbits and that we weren't a standard distance from the center of the galaxy at all times in our orbit of it. It's just fascinating stuff. There's also a three-part series in there, which I know everyone's going to love, about reincarnation and discussing reincarnation in the context of the Gita.
Yeah, and also the field trips that you named so aptly as field trips. Those are extremely popular for those of you who may want to just skim through the episodes and just go to the field trips. That's something that you might find fun. The Gita also talks about its explanation of the Big Bang theory.
Yeah.
And expanding and contraction, which it talks about and explains beautifully. And it's there in the episodes.
So there's a lot of stuff in here. You should go through it from beginning to end, and you can still contact the doctor as we go along here so that if you have questions, he'll always be available to there. And you just talked about some of the things we talked about in the field trip, I think is what we're going to be talking about going forward, correct? Where we're talking about some of the origins of Western culture and Western civilization originating in the East, in India, Norse mythology, things like that, that has its beginnings there that we're not aware of here in the West. That's not what we're taught. So that's something we're going to be exploring in our next podcast. But I just wanted to use this episode to give people a little bit of a user's guide. It took me a while at the beginning to understand the difference between the Gita and a religious document and a religious doctrine. And it took me a while to get used to the terminology and things like that. So I'm trying to give people a head start so they can just dive right in.
Great. And I have to say, from a personal standpoint, this has been a wonderful experience. I made a new friend with Lou, and I really have loved working with Lou. Without Lou, this would not have been possible. But the whole journey of revisiting again and again the Gita, studying it, and teaching it as the Gita talked about in the last few verses that we did, you know, just being able to teach it helps me ground myself more. It helps me get better at what it is that I've already learned. It's with mixed pleasure. Well, part of me says it used to be a lot of work. Only Lou knows, and my wife knows, yeah, how much work went into each one of these episodes. That to me is like, I look forward to not having that every week. But at the same time, I'm sad that it's over.
This is another point that I want to give to people before we send them off to episode one and starting the journey, is that we talk about self-realization a lot, and that's the goal, which is where you become one with Brahman, where you drop attachment to all your desires and you're at peace, and very few people realize that goal. But that shouldn't discourage anybody, because small gains, and you often talk about yourself as being a toddler or in preschool with these kinds of teachings. And if that's true, I've barely made it out of the womb for it. But by the same token, it has given me such a great amount of help. I have gained great benefit just from the baby steps that I've taken with this. It is worthwhile to pursue. Very few of us are going to become self-realized in our lifetime, but small gains give us big rewards and help you deal with every day and help you find peace and help you feel better about yourself and your position. And again, find peace of mind. Very important to understand that you don't have to become self-realized in these 216 episodes. All you have to do is make some gains, and you're going to reap benefits from it.
Yeah, I can tell you that from personal experience, that you benefit not just by knowing this. Your thinking becomes clearer. You become much sharper, laser focused on what it is that you're doing. You're not disturbed and distracted by desires constantly distracting you, and it helps you a lot in your goals.
Okay, so we're done with the journey of going through the Gita verse by verse, but we're not done. We're on to another journey. Do you want to spill the beans now, or you want to wait and tell people?
I want to wait, because there's a few other things that I need to work out with you, Lou, and yep, maybe we can come back to it next time.
Yep. So enjoy this. Go to episode one, work through it. Feel free to, you know, backtrack and look. And if you go through the episode titles, again, a good place to start is the field trips. There's some great episodes in there as well. And much like you, I have made a friend through this, which is priceless. I've enjoyed working with you. And this has been, like I said, I've worked on mindfulness, and this has reinforce some of those principles to a large degree, given me a deeper understanding of some of those principles to a large degree, given me new principles to work with. This has been a beneficial journey for me. As much as I've enjoyed it, it has helped me immensely too. And I think it will all the listeners to go through. And while you're commuting back and forth to work, take in some of these episodes. I think you'd be as fascinated as I was.
Thank you, Lou. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.